Home is a haven of rest, a sanctuary place of relief and safety from the hassles and hecticity of our frantic lives. Is certainly a place where we look for the promise of peace to reign supreme, for health and healing to take place. Unfortunately, more often than not, the hectic hassles catch up with us even there. What happens to those good intentions in our intimate relationships? I'm Larry Viverka, your host for Probe. To assist me in exploring this question, I'm pleased to have as conversation partners Eileen Bauer, visiting lecturer in biblical studies, and Dave Thomas, dean of the Walla Walla College School of Theology. Welcome to Probe.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, what does go wrong in a marriage that would be well for us to know and to guard against as we put that information up front to look at?
Well, I think we mentioned last week the loss of novelty. You know, the newness wears off, and you begin to realize you're living with a real person, and that person sometimes has flaws, maybe always.
You know, that idea of this incredible rush of feeling that takes over, mm-hmm. it can be so intense that it's almost painful, is almost universally used as some kind of measure of attraction mm-hmm. and love. Mm-hmm. And it simply is impossible to sustain, even though, fascinatingly enough, it's one of the questions we ask young couples, will you maintain this same level of romantic love that you're experiencing now in courtship? And unrealistically, many, many think that it's going to
stay
right there, mm-hmm. and they're going to maintain that throughout their lives.
Well, and I think one of the things that unfortunately tends to promote that probably is what society seems to portray in a lot of movies and so forth, that you have this, it's going to last and stay.
People want this to show up instantly and stay forever, and mm-hmm. if it doesn't, then somehow they're unhappy. But I think there's another thing, Larry, and I think that one of the things that makes marriages go into difficult times is when you begin to discover that some of the hopes and dreams and expectations you had for this marriage and for your partner are simply not going to be that way. And I'm not talking about little things here. I'm talking about some perhaps very deep-seated hopes that you, for example, thought that your spouse would never speak to you in anger, because anger is something that you don't like or you dislike intensely, and you find out that your spouse gets to the point where they're quite willing to do that, to speak to you in anger.
Mm-hmm.
I use that as an example, as a possible example, that if that is a cherished expectation of yours and it is disappointed and you've been living with it for 4 or 5 years, you come finally to the place where you realize that as long as you are in this marriage, that's probably going to be part of the dynamic. And that's the kind of mm-hmm. of loss of expectation that I'm talking about, not mm-hmm. the fact that you didn't get a new car this year and had to wait a year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about relational ones.
In the seasons of a marriage, there is a point about at the 10-year mm-hmm. time when those realizations come true, and you are aware that things are not going to change. And that's one of the crucial times or breakup points in a marriage when when partners in a relationship begin to think forward now for the next 40 years and asking that question, can I live with what I have here?
As opposed to what I thought I had.
As opposed to what I thought I had, right.
Yeah. And, you know, the hard thing about some of these expectations is that some of them are flat-out unrealistic. You know, that I think most couples, when you come to marriage, you have some expectations that are really not in the realm of reality. It's just not the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Part of the challenge in also in marriages is that Those what Ellen White calls the early attentions, those little graceful acts of courtesy and thoughtfulness, begin to disappear, and we begin to take things for granted, take each other for granted as well. And with the disappearance of those positive interactions, often they become displaced with more negative and challenging and sharp exchanges. And with that shift, also relationships move into a trouble zone. And there's this just whole press or business of life where people grow apart. They neglect their moments of intimacy and closeness, the process times that you were talking about last week. And those, as those disappear, people find themselves often strangers in the same
place. And sometimes, I like what you said there, I think it's important to realize that sometimes that just comes from the press of living. We live at a high rate of speed. Mm-hmm. We sometimes can, as husbands and wives, see very little of each other because we're all doing different things. And we become strangers living in the same place.
Well, and I also think that the will has something to do with it. In other words, what do we choose to focus on about our partner? Because when you live with someone, you're aware not only of their positives, but their negatives. And if you choose to spend all of your time thinking about the negatives and wishing those would change, rather than remembering the reasons you fell in love and that you value and appreciate about this person, I think you can get unbalanced very easily.
You remind me of one of Ellen White's favorite words, Aline, and that is the word forbearance. what do you think she means when she uses that word and encourages us to appropriate that?
Wow, that's an interesting word, Larry, because it smacks of having to endure. And I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way, but I mean it means to persist. In spite of some struggle, that's what I see in that word, to forbear, to recognize that this other person has some challenges about them that you have to live with. I guess understanding that they have some challenges connected to you that they have to live with.
Well, rather than focusing on endurance, there might be another way of thinking of that, and that is, when the opportunity presents itself in someone else's fault or failure, rather than immediately confronting, we hold back. We restrain ourselves from pointing out the faults or failures of a person when there might be every right and reason to do so. It's that sort of it. Well, it. I think it's a word that's consistent with my understanding of the word grace.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And being gracious to the other person when they might not be really meriting that from us.
Hmm. I like that.
Dave, you brought up the idea of anger as an example for one of the expectation challenges. What about anger? Is this a negative, destructive emotion? Is it one that we ought to expunge from our emotional system? And I'm thinking of Paul when he tells us in Ephesians to be angry, but sin not or do not sin.
Well, I have come to understand that anger is a valuable emotion because it has a great capacity to set the scales to balance. It is a great instrument in rectifying wrongs. But anger is a very dangerous emotion. I think it can easily be lost control of. And so I think the qualifications Paul has that you should not nurse anger and that anger should find its resolution by evening, I think are very important guidelines. And I think we have to be very careful, too, that I think people handle anger differently. I see in life that there are some people who get angry slowly, but once you finally made them angry, they cool down slowly. And the best thing to do with them is just leave them alone till they process their anger. There are other people who flare up very quickly, but they settle down very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny when you have, or interesting when you have people of each of those categories in association with each other, because the one flares up and kind of burns over the territory of the other one, and the other one's trying to figure out what happened here. And in the meantime, the one who got angry is already calmed down and is ready off, and the other one is just figuring out they got burned, you know.
Well, and you also find in marriages people come from different backgrounds, and sometimes you have been brought up in a home where there is a lot of loud talking, and what sounds to another person who has been brought up in a very quiet home is anger. And so if you have a spouse from each of these different backgrounds, I think then you have some real working to do to know how to deal with something where it doesn't come across as anger.
And Gottman points out that couples can have just vigorous discussions, arguments, and for someone else it might sound like the War of the Worlds or something. But, but when those qualities of friendship, of humor, of attempts at repair are present in those discussions, people can have very good marriages and really continue to work together in that particular manner. That doesn't seem to be...
No.
What makes for challenges or difficulties in marriage?
And actually, expressions of anger do tend to clear the air. You know, I see that in some friendships. So people get angry and everything gets cleaned off and they, all right, now we're off. We've got a new understanding, so we get underway. So.
I have some difficulty with anger being the mechanism for intimacy. In other words, I don't really feel close to you unless you get that intense with me.
No.
I did work with one couple where that was the case. They learned better methods of talking with each other and managing conflict. They came back after 3 weeks, and the male thought that his wife was having an affair and was no longer in love with him because
she wouldn't fight with him.
Wouldn't fight with him. So.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, anger, I think, is a very powerful and important emotion. It certainly it must be there. It's in the heart of God. If we didn't become angry at wrongs, injustices, people being hurt in ways that are wrong, we would be in serious trouble. Once again, the invitation is to love unconditionally, to not keep a record of wrongs, to be appropriately angry, and to use that strong emotion to constructively affect change for the better. I wish to thank my... colleagues, Eileen Bauer and Dave Thomas, for their help in exploring the dynamics of how to insulate a home for relationship safety. Thanks, too, to Susan Michael, our technical director for Probe. I'm Larry Viver.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.